Welcome back to the Pesky Report. This is episode 341 of the Pesky Report, brought to you by Beyond the Monster. My name is Derek. I'm here with Hunter. Jake is unfortunately not with us this week. He'll be hopefully joining us back again next week when his schedule isn't as clogged. And it's a two-man show. It is a tag team episode, as you say, potentially. And Hunter and I are ready to lay the smackdown on the minor league.
WrestleMania was this weekend, so you'll have to
excuse me. Yes. Yeah, we're riding that high a little bit. But no, we are excited. There's not a ton to talk about in terms of minor leagues in some senses, because like Portland played one game and like that was it, and Greenville and Salem only played three games each, so there's not a ton to talk about, but we'll discuss as much as we can. It probably won't be a hour and 50 minute show again this week, at least, so you have that. But there is news, breaking news, and it's not minor league related, but it's a alumni of our of the minor leagues. It's one of our favorite people, especially Hunter's and mine. So Seydon Rafaela received an 8-year extension worth $50 million,
and
that broke, I think, half an hour before we hit record. And so I think it's the perfect time to cover it. Obviously, I think I can speak for the both of us. We both love Rafaela, but seeing him get this extension, I don't know what your initial reaction was, Hunter, but when I first heard it and first saw it, I was just like, I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. The really high floor guy has the potential to be, you know, a 5-tool guy if, you know, at his peak, if everything works out perfectly. 8 years, $50 million. It seems like a good piece of business to me. What are your thoughts on that, Hunter?
Yeah, like you, when I first saw it, they didn't have the deal, the terms of the contract yet. So it was just everyone knew, you know, he got extended. But at first, no one really knew exactly what it was. But obvious excitement right there. And then when I saw the terms, it felt like a steal, honestly. 8 years, $50 million. That means they're going to have him under contract until he's, I think, 32 or I think 31, but like he'll go into free agency as a 32-year-old. $50 million just isn't a lot of money in today's baseball. Like, you're getting a guy that has already shown he plays elite defense in center field. The amount he's already made multiple run saving plays in the outfield. He has the versatility to play shortstop, second base. I mean, they could throw him at third. He hasn't played there in a long time, but he's shown speed, electricity. He's the first game of the season, he had that triple that shouldn't have been a triple. He had a triple last night. He had two hits last night, which, you know, maybe that's a little something of him waking up on offense, which that's something most of the offense needs to do, but we won't get into that too much. It feels like such a fantastic deal for the Red Sox. They now have someone who is going to be a Gold Glove finalist, probably the entirety of his contract. Every year he's going to be a Gold Glove finalist. So you now have that locked down. We've seen how important defense is. Obviously Trevor Story went down. That sucks. But we saw what a difference having Trevor Story at shortstop and Seydon Rafaela in center field every day was making for the team. So just to have that set in stone that, hey, we now have this Gold Glover in center field for the next 8 years has to be such a relief for the pitchers. It's going to make everyone else in the outfield better because they don't have to do as much. It's going to be such a big thing for the whole team. You have this electric bat in the lineup who, yeah, sometimes he's going to struggle. It's not like he's going to be a perennial silver slugger, but he's going to bring electricity. He's going to be a spark plug in that offense at points. So I think that offensively he brings value. He brings excitement, and defensively, he's going to be the constant platinum glove type guy in the outfield. It's to me, that's such a phenomenal deal, and I'm jacked up that they got it done.
Yeah, definitely. I think the big thing too is you look at this like from a business perspective too. You look at, you know, the average annual value of this deal, eight years, $50 million. That's 6.25 AAV. For $6.25 million, you probably don't even get a starter. You're likely not to get a starter on the free agent market.
Yeah.
For that much money. And you're getting a guy who, even if he doesn't hit, is an everyday center fielder because of his defense. I think that it's a win regardless for the Red Sox. And it's also smart business in terms of everyone talks about, oh, well, the Red Sox don't want to spend money, blah, blah, blah. The AAV is not high enough. It's like, first of all, the AAV has no bearing on the Red Sox spending, let's be honest. Because if a guy's AAV is $20 million, that doesn't mean the Red Sox are necessarily paying him $20 million that year. They could be very well paying him more or less that year. So with Rafael, like at the beginning of this contract, yeah, the AAV is going to be $6.25 million, but they're only going to be paying him probably $1 million maybe. And it pushes the AAV higher, but also on the back end, it allows you to spend more money because in terms of before hitting the CBT threshold, because you might be paying him on the back end $10 million, $15 million, maybe whatever it might end up being, but it only counts as 6.25 against the luxury tax, against the CBT, going towards the first CBT threshold. So I think it shows that eventually, when the time comes, ownership's going to spend. And by getting these guys locked up, it actually makes it so they can spend more money down the road. They can spend more money without before hitting like the CBT threshold by kind of, I don't want to say game, it's not gaming the system, but like if you're paying someone $10 million and their luxury tax hits only $6.25 million, you're in terms of luxury tax, that's $3.75 million less, which means that's less money towards when you start having to pay taxes on it through the thresholds and the luxury tax. Overall, I think it's a very good piece of business. In the first years, obviously it's a higher AAV hit, but like I said, $6.25 million, like that's a for an everyday center fielder who's bringing you goal defense, I don't think you can complain about it at all. And it's nice to see, because we saw, obviously, back when Haim was running the team, and we saw like the Whitlock extension, but that was it, right?
Yeah.
Now that we got the Bayo extension coming in, and then Rafaela, which is fun because those are two guys too. We look at, you know, we talk about the minor leagues, and this is why we love seeing the minor leagues, and these two are the perfect example of it. Bayo coming from signing for $28,000 out of the Dominican and making his way all the way up and getting his extension with the Red Sox. And now Rafaela being signed for $10,000 out of Curacao, coming up through the minors and now he gets his extension. This is why the minor leagues are so fun. You get to see these guys blossom into good players and turn themselves into big leaguers, and then you eventually see them get paid in the big leagues and hopefully stick with the Red Sox for a long time, which the two of them are going to be, and hopefully other guys such as Casas and, you know, some of the pitching staff too, guys like maybe Houck eventually gets an extension, or, you know, or maybe even start looking at guys in the minor leagues even getting extensions at some point, whether it's a Meyer or an Anthony or a Teal, or maybe not, but I think that's what makes the minor league so fun. You get to see these guys grow and turn themselves into some of the best players in baseball. And you can't see that in the big leagues, because as much as it is, you know, I mean, it is a little bit of a hassle to watch minor leagues constantly, and I'm sure Hunter can speak to that because he watches probably 50 million games a year. And he's probably – and trying to – that's a lot of information to digest. And I struggle with it at times. I will openly say it. I'm like, I can't be watching Salem and Greenville and Portland and Worcester and also have the Red Sox game on. That's a little bit much. It's a little bit overload for me. Hunter is just like four screens or whatnot. He's got them all on and going crazy. It's like I wish a little information overload for me. But like that's the fun of following along with the minor leagues, right?
Yeah.
Is you get to see these guys grow. And I think we're hopefully seeing this. Everyone talks about, you know, this minor league farm system with the Myers, Anthony Teal, and whatnot. Hopefully we're seeing this next generation of Red Sox players, homegrown Red Sox players at that. And you get to see the process of them. We remember him when Meyer was drafted and him, you know, going a low A for the first time. And then he goes up to high A. And then last year, the call up to double A. We're going to remember the call up to AAA and then the call up to the big leagues. And then hopefully he becomes, you know, like the greatest shortstop ever, you know, hopefully, you know, I'm not saying he will. I'm saying hopefully you hope that, but like, that's the fun in it. And I think that's kind of big picture of it. Hunter, if you have any more thoughts on this Rafaela extension that you'd like to add before we move on to Worcester?
I don't think so.
All right, so we'll move on to Worcester. And now with that, we have news of the King of Worcester, I guess, is going back to Worcester. Bobby Dalbec has been sent down to Worcester. So it's interesting because there is no name on who is getting called up to the big league. So that's something to kind of keep in mind as we are recording. We know Bobby Dalbec has been optioned back to AAA. We are not aware of who is being called up. So that's something that's unsure of. But with Worcester, they did play games. They were postponed on Wednesday and Thursday. I was in Worcester on Wednesday. It was hailing. There was no way they were playing unless you wanted the entire AAA team to get hailed on, which wasn't fun because I got hailed on. It was not fun. But they did win one game, but they unfortunately did lose the other four games. Overall, they did have some performances. The offense wouldn't have a crazy week, but there was some decent pitching performances. So I'll hand it over to Hunter. Who do you want to talk about on the AAA team in terms of performances?
Well, they're playing a game now, which is a little strange.
Yes.
But, so today we've already seen Nathan Hickey hit a homer. So that's his second. He's hitting in the high 290s there. That's awesome. It's kind of what we expected. Obviously, you don't want to put too much pressure on someone, but we kind of expected him to go up there and just keep hitting because that's what he's done his entire career, is just continue to hit. And then I also want to put a quick spotlight on Nico Cavadas, because we talked about him 2 weeks ago whenever we did our AAA preview. And my big thing was it'll be interesting to see how he plays, because at the time, Stephen Scott was still on the team. And the thought process was Nico Cavadas isn't going to get much playing time, but maybe he'll play. Maybe that playing time will be better for him because he'll start to really get matchups. And then Stephen Scott was gone, and it was kind of like, oh, what's the deal with Nico Cavadas now? It seems like they're sticking with that, though. They've been having Romy Gonzalez, Jamie Westbrook. They've been having a bunch of different people playing first base. And Nico Cavadas seems to only really be playing against right-handed hitting. And it's worked out very well for him so far. He is 4-for-12, obviously very subject to change with them playing right now. But he is 4-for-12 with a double, a homer. He's walked 6 times compared to only 4 strikeouts. Now, 4 strikeouts in, that would, I guess, be 18 plate appearances. Still isn't the best thing in the world, but it's not terrible at all, especially for Nico Cavadas, who has had massive strikeout problems in the past. And the fact that he's walking more than striking out is phenomenal. The guess would be that Romy Gonzalez is getting called up.
We do have news on that, supposedly. Okay. Old friend of the show at hand just tweeted out that it is he was told that it's Romy going to the big leagues.
Okay. So that kind of just, to me, that's just a one-for-one replacement in AAA, where now Bobby will be playing against left-handed pitching at first base, and Nico will be getting the majority of the right-hand hitting. I'm sure they'll still get Bobby in the lineup because we've seen him destroy AAA pitching. But it's been good to see. It's obviously very small sample size. 18 plate appearances isn't much. But we've seen the philosophy of putting Nico Cavadas in matchups that favor him work absurdly well in the short period. So that's phenomenal to see. Hopefully he can keep building off that. Maybe that confidence will help him. Maybe he'll get a couple at-bats versus left-handed pitching this year and handle that decently well. But he's someone that I've said before in the past, even with the not great numbers, he's someone that I think could be a very useful bat in the majors at some point in his career, because he does hit right-handed hitting or right-handed pitching very well. And he's a guy that will get on base and hit home runs. He's very much a 3 true outcomes guy, but we've seen that work in the majors before. And with him being a left-handed hitter, there's more matchups for him. It's one thing if you're a right-handed hitter that can't hit right-handed pitching, there's not as many left-handed pitchers in the league. But if you're a left-handed hitter, you're going to have more opportunities. So he is someone that I could see helping a team down the line. So it's tough for him with the Red Sox because they have Tristan Casas, and hopefully, we were talking about extensions before, hopefully he's the next one to come. But he's someone that I don't know if he has a path with the Red Sox, but he's someone that I could see being a decent bat for another team in the majors at some point down the line.
Definitely. I think with Cavadas too, I mean, we know what he is. He's a three true outcome guy, which I don't say that to like scare people off and be like, oh, three true outcome, like what, Joey Gallo? But like, hey, Joey Gallo was good for a few years.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Adam Dunn. Like,
yeah.
These guys can be very serviceable players in the majors.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I think that's the thing with him. Like, you know what you're getting, even though it's not going to be some like elite, like guy who's going to hit like 40 homers necessarily and like have a high batting average and draw walks in terms of like draw walks, not strike out. No, he's going to draw his walks. He's going to hit homers, but like, yeah, he's also going to strike out a ton. But that's who he is, right? And you know that, right, with him. So that there's always that thing. Also, another left-handed hitter. So like, this organization loves lefties, which I'm just waiting for the one day where it's just a lineup full of lefties at the big league level. So, like, Meyer gets up there, Anthony Teal, Cavadas too, yep, go up Hickey, there. Hickey, yep, another lefty. Just get them all up there. Hamilton's a lefty, which he actually I guess we could talk about him a little bit because he did get called up. He was 1-for-9 in his at-bats in Worcester this past week before being called up. Then he gets called up, obviously has the game. I think it was, 2-for-3 was it, or 2-for-4?
I think it was 2-for-4. But
I think it was 2-for-4. But he hit the homer, his first career big league homer. So shout out to David Hamilton. Congrats on your first big league homer. That's awesome.
Yeah, I love that because there was a lot of chatter on Red Sox Twitter of like, oh, man, we have to see this guy again. So for him to go up there and hit a home run immediately was fantastic to see because he's such a nice guy and works his ass off. And I – even with the you know, he's not going to give you a super high batting average. The defense isn't great at shortstop. He still brings such an element with that speed that, like, he's a danger. So it's nice to see him come in, have a big first game. And with Trevor Story sadly most likely out for a while, it'll at least be good to see David Hamilton maybe take advantage and prove himself in the big leagues.
Well, I've always felt he can at worst be a guy who can be a backup middle infielder on the bench because of his speed. At worst. So like, this is a chance for him to prove like, hey, he can stick in the big leagues. It's a little bit tough because he is a lefty and a, you know, lefty heavy team. So the fact of like, oh, him being on the bench, like the Red Sox are typically probably going to want righties on the bench because of the fact that they have 20 lefties on their team. But overall, I think when you look at the kind of big picture of it, I think you can very much look at David Hamilton and go, okay, this is your chance to prove that you're a big leaguer. And I think there's no real pressure on him. I think in terms of like probably from the team, I think the team's probably just told him like, hey, you know, just be yourself, play like you can, and don't put too much pressure on yourself because that's the only thing that can really hurt him at this point. Just go out there, be the David Hamilton we know, get on base, you know, be aggressive on the bases, steal bases, aggressive base running. And that's been kind of, I think, when everyone's looked at this team so far this year with the guys, when it was Story, when he was healthy, obviously, you have guys like Tyler O'Neill, Rafaela, Jaren Duran, et cetera. All those guys can run the bases and can run. And I think David Hamilton adds to that as well. Obviously, he's replacing Story, someone who can run himself. So that's kind of a big thing there. The other thing in terms of minor leagues I want to talk about is the on AAA side of things, kind of the pitching staff. Obviously, Cooper Criswell has had two very solid starts. Went 5 1/3 in his first, 5 2/2. He's only given up one earned. He's got 9 strikeouts between the two starts with only 3 walks. He has hit 3 batters, which is, I mean, if you're going to walk them, you might as well hit them. Don't actually. No, not actually. Hey, it saves the pitch count.
Yeah.
But no, not actually. But honestly, that's kind of a I find that funny as he takes 3 people. Just save the pitch count. Just, you know, that should be your new way of intentionally walking people. You gotta beat them. I'm not actually recommending that. But no, Criswell's look good, and I think he's important for the Red Sox team because he is that legitimate MLB depth in AAA that if someone in the rotation gets hurt or whatnot, he can just step into the rotation and kind of be that guy. And I think that's really big for this team. And having that guy in AAA that has MLB experience, he's not the most overpowering guy, but he can go in and be that, you know, make those spot starts if he's needed, right?
Yeah.
Because Chase Anderson, as much as people could be like, oh, he could make a spot start, let's be honest, I think for the Red Sox, it's probably better being in this kind of swingman role where he could eat up 2-3 innings at a time in the bullpen. Yeah. And then you bring someone else up to be the spot start, because if you have Chase Anderson spot start, you lose that swingman in the bullpen.
Yeah. Yeah.
They also, obviously, we've seen them bring in Naoyuki Uwasawa, who I'm personally excited about because I did see him pitch in the NBB a little bit last year, and he's not going to overpower anyone, but he's got 6 or 7 different pitches. Like, you're telling me you can't find 2 or 3 that are going to stick and be decent at least. And
yeah,
you know, that's how I feel on him. It's like, you can't tell me out of those 6 or 7 pitches, 2 or 3 of them can't be decent pitches at the worst. Like, they'll find at least 2 or 3. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and that's another piece of the big league depth. Obviously he's reported to Worcester now. So I think overall, like, I think seeing this MLB depth in Worcester also helps too. And we talk about some of the guys like a Brian Van Bell or a Grant Gambrill, for example. Now they kind of have, I guess you could say, like the veteran guys there too, that they can look at and pick their brains a little bit and whatnot and kind of figure that out too. I think that's always a nice thing to have. And then, you know, other things on the pitching side, I guess you can talk a little bit about the bullpen. Because Jorge Benitez has looked good out of the bullpen, 6 strikeouts and 2 appearances. Zach Kelly's looked good, although he's walked 5 people in 4 innings this week.
But hey, no hits. So
yeah, hey, no hits, right? I mean, you look at a great big picture, a walk probably is better to give up than a hit, I guess. So you take that, I guess. And then Luis Guerrero, he's pitched twice. He's got 2 1/3 innings under his belt, and he's got 2 strikeouts and just 1 walk. I'm excited for Luis Guerrero, honestly. Yep. I think that's a guy who really could potentially impact the Red Sox bullpen this year among all the guys they have, which is kind of crazy to say because the bullpen looks amazing right now. And then you got guys like Zach Kelly and Brandon Bernardino that, let's be honest, are probably ahead of him on the pecking chart in the pecking order in terms of getting called up to the big leagues. But I think Guerrero is the one guy who I think you can look at in the system as a whole and go, that's your future closer.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the guy that you look at and you see a very clear vision of a future for him, which is, it's exciting. I love having a guy that you can envision as a closer for the franchise for the next 10, 15 years. Pitching this early in the season is so funny to me, though. Because if you look at the Worcester pitching staff, they have 4 guys with ERAs over 14, and then they have 5 guys with ERAs under 1, and it's just it goes to show you how, like, one bad outing in this early in the year can just destroy you. Like, Joe Jakes gave up 6 runs in a third of an inning in his first outing. He's been fine since then, 1 run in 2 innings, but the ERA is still 27 because of how tough that first outing was for him. But yeah, we have Cooper Criswell with a 0.87, Jorge Benitez with a 0, Luis Guerrero with a 0, Zach Kelly with a 0. And then new prospect for the system, Dick Fitz, Richard Fitz went 4 1/3 innings. He did give up 6 hits and 2 walks, but only 1 unearned run. So it wasn't a 3 strikeouts. So it wasn't like the best start or anything. He definitely didn't look his cleanest, but to me, that's a positive that this clearly wasn't his sharpest outing and he still put the Woo Sox in a position to win the game. He's still, you know, 4 1/3 innings, 1 unearned run. You could do a lot worse than that. As I just mentioned, they have 4 guys with ERAs over 14. So they've seen a lot worse outings than that. So to me, that was a really positive start to see from the new guy in a new system. I think this was his AAA debut. I don't remember if he pitched in AAA last year for the Yankees. I don't think he did because I know he was like the...
I don't think so.
Yeah, because I know he was the Eastern Conference Pitcher of the Year, so I'm pretty sure So yeah, I'm pretty sure this was his AAA debut. So like that being your, that's a really solid debut. Like you shouldn't expect someone to go out there and go seven shutout innings in their AAA debut. So to me, that was just, we saw him fight through adversity, get out of a lot of jams. I think he got like two or three double plays. So that was a massive positive for me, because that's someone that got brought into the system and immediately became one of their higher rated pitching prospects. And if they can end up getting a good starting pitcher out of that Alex Verdugo trade, I think Red Sox fans would go nuts. That would be phenomenal for them. You got a good starting pitcher from the Yankees for a guy that Yankees fans already aren't liking. So I think that would make a lot of Red Sox fans happy.
And a guy, unfortunately, Red Sox fans didn't like at all by the end of last year.
Yeah. Yeah, also, the amount of Yankees fans I've seen that have done like this guy's a sleeper agent for the Red Sox, and then all the Red Sox fans are like, "No, we told you, like,
yeah,
we told you there's going to be a lot of ground outs to second base. I don't know what you want."
Yeah, and wait till Alex Verdugo showed up late. You know, wait for that one to come in. That sounds fun. I think that's kind of a good place to wrap up on Worcester. Obviously, they kind of had the most action out of anyone.
Yeah.
But even then, like, they played five games because of the rain. They didn't play the full six. They are currently playing a game right now, which is weird, and they have an off day tomorrow on Tuesday, which is exceedingly stupid, but whatever, I guess.
It'll make my Tuesday a little bit easier. That's one less game I have to try to watch, so whatever.
Exactly. Hunter won't have to have four screens. He'll only need three. I think we should move on to Double A. They only played one game, so there's not much to talk about. But what we can talk about is the pitching, because Angel Bastardo went five innings, only gave up one hit, which unfortunately was the only gave up one run as well, unfortunately, which was the only run that was scored that game in a game that only saw five hits between the two teams. So very fun game. Super exciting. And then Theo Denlinger came in. He went two innings. And then, obviously, friend of the show, CT, Christopher Troy, goes two innings, four strikeouts, clean with the exception of the one walk he gave up.
You could argue that walk should have been a strike three. That you could make a very strong argument that he should have finished that game with five strikeouts and no walks, but he looked nasty, so that was fun.
I think all the umpires this year have gone to like the Angel Hernandez convention of umpiring. It's so bad. Like, I don't want to even get me started on it, but the umpiring this year has been horrific.
They see how much media attention Angel Hernandez gets for being so bad, and they're like, oh, we can do that. I want to get talked about.
Gosh. Oh, it's horrific. Yeah, it's – I'm bringing this up just because I feel like it needs to be brought up by someone. The Yankees. I forget who they were playing. Was it the Yankees? It was the Yankees. I forget, but I think it was the Blue Jays and Yankees. And the pitcher literally stepped off the rubber, and then he stepped back on and then threw the pitch. And it wasn't even a strike at that.
It was against Gleyber Torres, and it was like, wow, that's
– Angel Hernandez for you. Oh my god, umpiring's been bad. But no, CT looked very good. I think Bastardo looked solid. I'm already drawing a blank because it was one game and I have the worst memory. Theo Denlinger,
yeah.
Yeah. My memory does not serve me well because they played one game. I also have the memory of a goldfish, so that doesn't help. So I'm constantly trying to look and see. Oh, wait, no, who was that? I'm like, oh crap. I'm like, dang it, I forgot their name and I said it 2 minutes ago. That's what happens when you have somehow the worst memory ever. I don't know. My memory is horrific. But overall, I think Portland, there's not much to really go on. Obviously, Roman Anthony had two hits. So I guess we'll be acknowledging him now, and only him. No one else.
Yeah. There's no one else to acknowledge right now. So
yeah, no one else. So shout out Roman Anthony. Meyer had the other hit for the Sea Dogs. So they had three hits, two for Anthony, one for Meyer, and that was it. I mean, I guess like Edinson Paulino drew a walk. That's fun,
yeah.
I guess.
Marcelo Meyer did also steal a base, but that offense was just it was a tough matchup for them. They were going up against a left-handed pitcher. It's a left-handed lineup, and it was a guy who pitched very well in Double A last year. So, I mean, It's one of those, it's one game, you know, it's the first game of the year. A lot of people are trying to get into a groove, but just not the most exciting game to watch.
Either way, because the Yard Goats only had two hits themselves. So not that fun of a game in terms of offense. If you like pitching duels, I guess it was a decent game. I think for Bastardo, I think it's nice to see him get off to a good start.
Yeah, he retired the last seven batters he faced, which was nice to see him, you know, bounce back from giving up that one run. It's not, I don't even really feel like I should say bounced back, but just to see him close out to get to five innings and give Portland a chance was great to see. Because he's someone that had a stretch last year in high A where he looked phenomenal. But then there were, you know, parts between those where he struggled a little bit at the beginning of the year, then was fantastic for a while, and then he kind of started to struggle again, and then he got called up to Double A and looked good. I think he only made two starts though, so I love the fact that the Red Sox have enough trust in him that they made him the opening day starter for Portland, and that he went out there and showed them why it made sense for them to do that, because he's another guy I think that has a chance to really shoot up the rankings and give the Red Sox another guy who is seen as a legitimate starting pitching prospect. That's something that we talked about a lot last year with certain media members saying that the Red Sox don't have any starting pitching prospects, and kind of it seems like they've been working their ass off to prove them wrong between him and Wickelman Gonzalez and Luis Perales, and now we have Richard Fitz, Grant Gambrell, and Brian Van Bell in AAA. There's a Yordani Monegro. There's so many people all of a sudden that are exciting, that have a chance to make waves and turn into legitimate starting pitching prospects. And Angel Bastardo's someone that, I don't want to say he came out of nowhere last year, but really rose his stock last year. And to come out here game one and immediately put himself on the map and give Red Sox fans a reason to talk about him is exciting.
Yeah, I think overall too, it's the thing that sucks about Portland is we can't talk about them more because they're, I think, but at the same time, it's not necessarily because, I mean, we're going to be talking about them a lot this year,
yeah,
to say the least.
And we said with Luis Guerrero how there's like a clear vision for him. I think there's a clear vision for Christopher Troy too. I think it's Guerrero, Christopher Troy, and Alex Hoppe as the three relief pitching prospects who kind of have the best chance of becoming legitimate, not just bullpen pieces, but like high leverage bullpen pieces. They all have nasty stuff. They can all hit around 100. They rack up strikeouts. And so to see CT go out there day one, get multiple innings and look untouchable, kind of expected from him, honestly, at this point, not to put too much pressure on him, but we saw it for a heavy majority of last year outside of a small stretch when he first got called up to Double A, and obviously it takes a minute to adjust, but even after a very short couple games he started to dominate Double A, and we're seeing him build off that, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's in Portland for a month. So
yeah, the only other thing I think I'd like to see is for the Cardinals to have terrible roster management and give us Ryan Fernandez back. that's the only other thing I'd like to see, because that'd be fun. Which it's funny because I was actually playing MLB The Show, and I was doing a franchise mode with the Red Sox, and I'm in 2025 and I look at like Ryan Fernandez, and like in 2024 through the simulation he had like an 8 ERA, and then I look in like 2025 and he's got like a 2-something. I'm like, huh? I'm like, what? I'm like, first of all, why'd they keep him on the roster? One. And two, he's got a 2-something ERA after having 8-something. I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, guess that works. I also add Luis Guerrero as my closer for the Red Sox. Does 47 saves sound good?
I would cry. I would cry if Luis Guerrero became their closer and was given the Red Sox 47 save seasons. That's my dream right there.
Yes.
Give me a franchise, a homegrown franchise closer. I need it.
Oh my gosh. We haven't had one since what?
Papelbon? Yeah.
Yeah,
and he left in 2012. I think 2011 was his last season. So like it's been 12 years.
2011, everyone's last season, basically.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh my gosh, that year sucked. Hey, guess what? We're in 2024 though. 2024 is going to be great. And because of, and that's because Alan Castro is off to a great start in high A because he had a 5-walk game. Yes, you did not hear that wrong. He drew five, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 walks in the Greenville season opener. And I bring that up, one, because Alan Castro's awesome, and two, because who the hell draws 5 walks in a game?
That was, you know, first off, great transition. I like how you just jumped right into Alan Castro. You didn't even say like on to high A. You were just like Alan Castro.
But no, in all honesty though, drawing 5 walks in a game is kind of insane.
Yeah.
Because not only do you need to get enough plate appearances to do it, the fact that he literally went 0-for-0 with 5 walks and no strikeouts, no sac flies at any other time, no, just 5 walks.
Yeah.
Just
and it's not even like the pitchers were wild. Like I think Greenville drew like 2 or 3 walks outside of him. Like, it's not like it was, oh, 5 different people had 3 walks. Like, no. Alan Castro was just taking his time.
Definitely. And I think it, too, it, like, you look big picture, too. The rest of the team, as a whole, has 10 walks in 3 games. Alan Castro has 6. He had 5 in 1 game. Like, it's so insane. Like... It's so insane. I remember it was the first game of the year, and I wasn't watching the Greenville game, but I was kind of following along, and I was actually looking at your Twitter, Hunter, and I see Alan Castro has 2 walks. He's got a 3rd walk. He's got a 4th one, and then he's got a 5th one. I'm just like, oh my gosh. I'm like, yeah. Well, I'm like, I put it in the group chat. I'm like, when are we making the OBP makes me want to use shirts? Like. Screw it, make those. Whatever. Get those made. So let's make those. We already got the defense ones. We already got the defense ones. Like, make the OBP ones now. But in all honesty, though, I think this Greenville team has the chance to fly under the radar. Very much so. With Alan Castro. You have guys like Christian Campbell, Cutter Coffey, Caden Rose hit a home run this past weekend. You have guys like Juan Chacon there. Shout out to Jake trying to get the Juan Chacon fan club started last year. Maybe he'll get back on that train. I know you said before we were talking about who to talk about for Greenville, Ronald Rosario had a very solid week.
Ronald Rosario was phenomenal this week.
So I think this Greenville team is just kind of the team where it's like, no, not a ton of people are looking at them because you have like, in terms of like, you got like the double A teams going to draw all the attention.
Yeah.
But you know, like the Greenville has some guys, especially on the pitching side of things. So I know Perales didn't have the greatest start. Rydas Senna didn't have like the greatest first appearance of the year. But like you, Connelly Ealy had a very decent game. He went 4 innings only allowed 1 hit, 6 strikeouts. Jonathan Brands had a couple of nice appearances out of the bullpen. You look at like it's funny because it's like this whole team, with the exception of 3 guys, hasn't allowed a run.
Yeah,
on the pitching side of things, Nathan Landry had a 3 inning appearance out of the bullpen.
That was great to see because he struggled last year when he got called up.
Yes, but I thought the 3 innings part was surprising as well in some senses.
Yeah.
Not a bad surprise though. I think it was kind of a, I think it was more of an interesting surprise than, oh, they had him go 3 innings.
Yeah.
But so I think like this, you know, high team, once all the things get clicking, especially on the pitching side of things, I think pitching wise, like this could, I think the high A team might be the team to watch on the pitching side of things.
Absolutely.
Because as much as the high A teams like Bastardo, Gonzalez, Coffey, Dobbins, Penrod, whatnot, like, you have Perales there right now. Yordani Monegro is eventually going to be there. And then you have Sandlin there as well. Connelly Early had a – is it Early or is it Ely? I always miss the R when I read it. It's Early. I thought it was Early. I sometimes miss the R when I read it. It's a,
I don't know why that gets me too with his name. I think because his first name's Connolly, so you got the double L's in there. So then you kind of just throw it into the last name too.
Probably.
I think the only issue with the pitching is that people like Nathan Landry and Jonathan Brand, who have combined for 5 nearly perfect innings, Nathan Landry hit someone. I wouldn't be surprised if they're not in high A for super long. Both college pitchers off to awesome starts. I think if they dominate for a month, I wouldn't be surprised if both of them get called up to double A. But yeah, Ronald Rosario is someone we talked about last week, where we were talking about how it wouldn't be shocking if he was moved up to double A relatively early, pending on Kyle Teal's situation, because he had already been in high A for a decent amount last year and he played well there. He's already 6-for-13 this year, 2 doubles, 2 RBIs, 2 runs. He's been fantastic. So I think he'll be there for a while, mainly because I think Kyle Teal will be in double A for a decent amount. But I think the second Kyle Teal gets called up, Ronald Rosario is moving up, if not sooner, because I mean, you can carry more than one catcher, obviously. I love the fact that Abram Liendo starts the year in high A, because he was someone that I beat the drum on a lot last year because the on-base or the batting average was never good. He hit like around 200, but he drew a lot of walks, stole a ton of bases, and played elite defense in the infield, mainly second base, but I'm pretty sure he played third and short at times. I could be wrong. But it was great to see him not only start the year in high A, but play in 2 games and go 4-for-10 with a triple and 2 RBIs. So he's already making an impact offensively, and we already know what he's going to bring defensively. Tyler Miller and Luis Ravello both have hit home runs this year. Both guys that I think Luis Ravello, someone who good defensive shortstop. We've talked about before in the past how he has a surprising amount of power potential. And then Tyler Miller is someone who I've said 1,000 times, I think he's phenomenal defensively at first base. So it's good to see him. He's already got 2 hits and a homer on the year. That was my big thing with when we thought Albert Feliz was starting in high A. I was excited to see that because I think he's going to put dents in walls in high A, break some windows. But the issue for me was that means Tyler Miller is not going to play consistently. So it's good to see him getting this consistent playing time right now and capitalizing on it.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like I said, with the Zaya team, it's not going to be the most looked at team, but there's definitely a lot of like solid guys there. I'm excited for Luis Ravello, seeing what he does. It's funny. I was looking through the team and I was looking through their roster, and I found it interesting because I think Luis Ravello is probably like their main shortstop. And I know like when you look at kind of like the team, it's like Liendo's probably going to play second base. He's not playing shortstop likely. It's like Cutter Coffey seems like they're set on him playing third base. You do have Christian Gamble, who I'm sure could play shortstop, but like there seems like they're rolling with him in the outfield more often.
I was surprised that he played a game at second, but because I thought that they were kind of trying to keep him in the outfield. But I like the fact that they're keeping him as someone that can play multiple positions. I think it adds so much to it because he's someone that I think we've all talked about how it wouldn't be shocking if he became a bigger name prospect for them, if he flew up the rankings, college guy, athletic, decent power. Like he kind of does everything. So the fact that they're going to let him continue to play multiple positions, I think it's going to help his team. I think it's going to, obviously he's going to play more. I think it's just going to add to his value.
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, that's the thing. I was looking through the roster. It's like the only guy who really is going to play shortstop is like Luis Ravello. Like I look at this team and I look and I go, who else is playing shortstop on this team? It's really like Christian Gamble. And like, that's it. Like Mikey Romero, once he's, you know, healthy and all set to go. And once they're by healthy, I mean, once they basically send him to Greenville, which, you know, could be any day, you never know.
Yeah.
But like, it is a team, Greenville team, like you're eventually too, you're going to start seeing some of those low A guys eventually at some point, maybe like a Miguel Blaise get jumped up there, which, hey, we get the Miguel Blaise, Alan Castro outfield reunion, which talk about fun.
Yeah. That's going to be fun. No one's going to complain about that.
No, not at all. And then you get like on the pitching side of things, like we talk about like Perales and Sandlin being in that rotation. It's like, well, Elmer Rodriguez Cruz at some point could very well be there. I got like a Jackson Pias very well could be there sometime soon because both of those guys already have time in low A. Yeah. I can't envision them being in low A for like a super, super long time.
Yeah.
And so like this team is going to get enforcements from that low A team. In terms of like, obviously, like a Miguel Blaise, like, you know, Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, like Jenickson Paez. So I think overall, when you kind of look at it big picture, it's like, I think the high A team is going to be, you know, it's not going to be the kind of feature team to look at in terms of if you want, if you were to only pick one team in the minor leagues this year. But I think it's going to be very underrated because of the fact that, yeah, it doesn't necessarily have the big, big name prospects, with the exception of probably like Luis Perales. But I mean, hey, you have Alan Castro there. That's always fun. You got your Sandlin guy, like Sandlin, who they obviously got in the Schreiber trade. And then you got it's a bunch of fun guys on the team. It's a bunch of guys, like, for example, Carter Coffey, who, yeah, he hasn't had the greatest start to life in the minor leagues, but that's also a guy when you look at and you go, oh, no, I could see him breaking out and having a very good year, right? There's a lot of guys like that where it's like, you very well can look at them and go, oh, yeah, no, the guys can probably – I can very well see that guy having a very good year and surprising people. And that's why I think this high A team is probably going to be not necessarily the most fun. I think Portland's going to be the most fun because of obvious reasons. But I think Greenville's definitely going to be a team. I mean, they got a championship to defend this year. And like I always say, winning matters in the minor leagues. It definitely does. And in terms of winning, obviously, the team that is really winning in terms of winning over, I guess you could say, the hearts of all the freaks and sickos in terms of following the minor leagues, like ourselves, is the fact that we get to see Miguel Blaise play every day in Salem and be healthy.
And I do just have one more note about High A quick. Yeah. I'm excited to watch them play this week because last weekend, they were playing in Greensboro, which is where my mortal enemy is.
Gross.
That is the announcer that I complained about last year. And I got to tell you, Greensville starting the season and me having to listen to him for the first three games was a hate crime. It was terrible. He does like a strike three, strike three, strike three, strike three, strike three every time someone strikes out. He screams home run for like 5 minutes if someone hits a homer. Someone got picked off and he just made like this laughing noise. And I almost turned off the game. I was like, if this wasn't my job, I don't think I'd be able to bear this. So I'm so excited for them to be home next week. I get to listen to Dan Scott, who is phenomenal at his job. Because I've already gotten to hear the Worcester announcers, who are great. I've gotten to hear the AA, the Portland announcers. I don't think Emma Tiedemann was there. She had a baby not long ago. Congratulations to her. But they're phenomenal. Salem with Giovanni Heater, and I haven't learned the new name. There's a new announcer with him this year, but I'll learn it very soon. They're phenomenal. And then Dan Scott is in High A, and he's fantastic. So I'm excited to get to hear a familiar voice, and it'll be fun to hear him talk about Alan Castro and Abram Liendo and the ridiculous pitching. That it'll be fun.
Definitely. I mean, to be fair, I'd rather watch the game on mute than not have a broadcast feed at all, because we know when it comes to low A, talk about low A, there are some there's a couple specific places that are not on our good side in terms of low A teams. Well, I'll just put it like that. I won't name any names, but you know who you are, and we know who you are. And you guys don't like us very much because you don't like having you don't like broadcasting your games, which makes no sense. To low A, Miguel Blaise drew himself four walks this week. So shout out. I gotta add this on Miguel Blaise. The guy added 33 pounds of muscle, basically, supposedly, over the offseason. That's insane. like he's like put it in, into this picture. Miguel Blaise is listed at 6'2", 205. So what was he then before he added the 33 pounds?
Yeah, he was. Now, that's also considering, 172. But that's also considering, I'm sure, if he gained 33 pounds of muscle, I'm sure he lost some pounds of fat. But, yeah, either way, he gained a lot of weight when he was around my weight. So that's ridiculous. Like, I can't imagine adding 33 pounds of muscle in an off season. I wish I could. That'd be great. I might have to reach out to him and get his workout regimen, but
yeah, no, definitely. I think though, in terms of like this is a low A team. I think they played three games. They unfortunately lost all of them. They're playing Delmarva, which sounds like some weird city in the middle of nowhere. This upcoming week sounds. I guess we could talk a little bit. Because Mr. Ehrlicher had a decent performance out of the bullpen. Shout out to all the Ehrlichers out there. Albert Feliz had a homer. I saw a couple games. He went 2 for 9. He also drew 2 walks this week. Like I said, Miguel Blaise had the 4 walks. He went 2 for 10. 429 on base percentage.
I'm not worried.
It's a small sample size.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not worried about a 2 for 10. Like, that was, to me, that was the least thing on my mind when it came to him. Like you said, he added 33 pounds of muscle. He played 2 games in the outfield, looked smooth. Like, he's a great defensive outfielder. He looked perfectly fine out there, so it doesn't look like the muscle's, you know, going to cause any issues for him out there. He hit a double. He stole a base. The big thing for me was the 4 walks compared to 3 strikeouts, because last year, in 142 plate appearances, he only walked 10 times. So the fact that we've seen 4 in 14 plate appearances already, like, that tells me that that's something that he was working on. And it was obviously never great last year, but I think a big reason that that number was so ugly last year was after he got hurt, you could really tell he was just kind of like going up there and flailing at stuff, trying to make contact. I think the injury was in his head. So it's good to see him clearly healthy. He looks fantastic and already making an impact for them offensively. The Big Al home run was majestic, unsurprisingly. He absolutely crushes baseballs. I don't know how long he'll be there, but I am excited for whenever he goes up to high A, because I think the home run numbers are going to be ridiculous. Johan Fran Garcia had a really good week, 4 for 11 with a double, an RBI, and a run. He also threw someone out trying to steal a base. He has a fantastic arm. I think that's something with him that doesn't really get talked about enough, because the offense is so intriguing. Also, he got hit by a pitch. I think it was the first game of the year. It was freezing out in Salem, apparently. And he, like, threw down his bat, threw down his helmet, and he was mad because it's, you know, 40 degrees and freezing rain, and you're getting hit by a pitch that's going to hurt. If I was the pitcher, I would have just started apologizing. That man's, like, 5'11", 200-something pounds. He looks like an absolute unit. Like, I would be terrified if that guy was angry after I hit him with a pitch. But something fun that happened this weekend was Johan Fran Garcia got on base. I think it was when he hit a double. And then Stinson Garcia, his older brother, doubled to bring him in. And that was something we saw last year. We saw Johan Fran driving Stinson, and now we're seeing it the other way around. So it was just fun that now they've both gotten to bring each other in. And Stinson's someone that, shout out to Giovanni Heater again, the Salem announcer. He was talking about him a lot this weekend, about someone that he thinks could surprise a lot of people. And kind of really what I was saying last week on the podcast, he was saying how, like, there's so many people that overshadow him on this team, like, name-wise. So, like, even his younger brother is a much higher rated prospect, but he gives you phenomenal defense. He's got a surprising pop in the bat. He turned it on at the end of last year. Like, I completely agree with him. I think he's someone that could really become a big part of that Salem offense and kind of anchor a team that has people like Johan Fran and Miguel Blaise and Marvin Alcantara and Antonio, and like a lot of guys that don't have a ton of experience at single A. And he could be kind of that constant threat, that like calming presence in the lineup that helps stabilize things when those younger guys are struggling or pressing a little bit too much.
Yeah, definitely. I think the other thing I wanted to add is we've seen a home run hit at Salem, and it's April 8th.
That's a good point. That might be a record.
I know. April 7th, we saw a home run at Salem. You know, where hitters' dreams go to die. We've seen a homer at Salem. I think it took until like March. I mean, into May last year.
It was bad last year. I think it was Luis Ravello. It was late in the year, but it was much later than it should be in the year for a home run to be hit at a ballpark.
Yes, very much. At least by a Salem player, at the very least. But no, it was insane. We've already seen a homer in Salem. So yeah, new record, I guess. So shout out. I don't know.
Big Al's toy barn.
I don't know. That ballpark is it doesn't suck, but it sucks because because we saw it last year with, like, for example, Roman Anthony. It's like his numbers in like low A look all right, but like they didn't look anything crazy. And then he goes to high A, which is supposed to make your numbers look worse. And then he goes and just tears that up. And it's like, hold on. It's like, well, what's going on in low A then?
Yeah, like, and we saw it with him and with Alan Castro last year, where when they got called up, a lot of people on Twitter were like, why? You know, like, oh, Alan Castro's hitting 230. Oh, Roman Anthony's hitting 220 with two homers. Why are you – like, they're not playing well. And it's like, because the organization's seeing something that you're not seeing just by looking at the box score. Like, yeah, they don't have good numbers because we saw it with – I think it was Miguel Blaze or Johan Fran Garcia. It was Johan Fran Garcia. Like his first at bat was, or his second at bat. I think his first at bat, he had a single. His second at bat, he absolutely crushed it, and it got caught in the center field wall, which is like 401 feet, and the wall's like 12 feet high. And it's like, yeah, no shit, he didn't. Like that's a home run or at least a wall ball at any other ballpark. Like, and then his next at bat, he hit one off the wall, which would have also been a homer at any other ballpark. So like you're seeing guys get a lot of outs that just shouldn't be outs, but they're playing at this miserable hitter's ballpark. Like, I don't know who built that ballpark, but he was clearly a pitcher before he became an architect.
Definitely. I gotta add to this, cause I'm just looking at this. This is stupid. It's totally off topic. The New York Mets AAA team is stupid. They have Yolmer Sanchez, Ben Gamel, Trace Thompson, Jose Iglesias, and Tomas Nito on their AAA team.
That's a lot of major league talent right there.
That's
Jose Iglesias has shown recently that he's still a productive MLB player.
I was just looking, because I was just looking at the box score, and I was looking at the lineup, and I'm like, hold on, that's the team they have for AAA? Like, it seems like at least two or three of those guys at least could be on an MLB bench somewhere. But
I mean, that Baltimore Orioles AAA team is unreal, too. Jackson Holliday shouldn't be in the minors. No. Heston Kerstad probably shouldn't be in the minors. Like, they have that team's ridiculous.
And what's wacky, I'll just bring this quickly on the Orioles. It's like they very well could use, like, Jackson Holliday or Heston Kerstad on their team. Yeah. Like, you look at their team and it's like, oh no, you could put like Jackson Holliday at short, Henderson at third, or like put Ramon Urias on the bench. Like, very easily could do that.
Yeah.
Like, but like they haven't. Like, you very well could find a spot for Heston Kerstad on your team. Like, you very easily could. And it's just like, it's like, can you stop murdering all the AAA pitching? Like, please. Like, why do you have to do it? Also, that's what you get for being bad for how many years and you draft well.
Yeah.
That's – hey, Orioles fans had to sit through that 2018 season where they went 47-115. Like, if you're that bad, you at least – I mean, I'd hope you pick someone good in the draft because I mean, like, let's be honest. Like, that's so – I don't know if we'll ever see a team lose more than 115 games, because that sounds hard to do in general. But, no, back to low A. I think overall, kind of grand scheme of things, There's some obviously what's his face? I'm drawing a blank. Oh, Nelly Taylor.
Okay.
We need to get confirmation on if he has a Nelly song for his walk up song.
I couldn't hear it in the broadcast, but I'll try to pay attention better next time they play at home. I didn't really think about it, but like as I'm playing it back, I don't remember hearing it. So
yeah. All I'm saying is if he doesn't have a Nelly song as a walk up song, that's kind of a disgrace.
Yeah, I agree.
If I was like the DJ or whatnot, and I was the one who had to put the song in, I would just put a Nelly song in anyways.
Yeah, if I'm an away team's
I'm
putting that on because you don't get to pick your walk up songs at away games. I think so. If I'm them, no, I'm like, oh, you're getting a Nelly song.
Yeah, imagine you got to pick your you get to pick your walk up song at an away game. Like, okay, that sounds great. Yeah, the Yankees are coming to Boston, so they get to pick all their walk-up songs. Yeah, no. Here's the thing. Whenever Alex Verdugo comes up the plate, they should play Kurt Angle's theme song.
Ooh, they should. That's a good point.
Yeah. I don't know how many people would
fans get into it.
I don't know how many people would get it. I would get it. I know you would.
I think he's popular. He was popular enough that like enough people would understand it. Like that then there would be a loud enough group of people that then everyone would join in.
Yeah.
They'd probably be like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah. It's just chanting, you suck. But the last thing I do want to mention in terms of, this isn't necessarily a Salem thing. This is more just an in general thing in terms of the minor leagues. Like I said, we're only – like Portland's played one game. Salem and Greenville played three games. So I think overall – and Worcester's played a few more games, but even then they played, what, ten games including today. There's a lot of season left. Obviously, we've covered what we have to cover, but there's only so much for us to cover. And whatnot. So I don't know, Hunter, do you have any final thoughts on low A before we kind of, I guess, no. We have no guess the prospects, so I don't know what to end on.
the pitching for low A, really, there hasn't been anything super phenomenal. We've seen a solid outing from Zach Fogle. Nathaniel Cruz, had two shutout innings. But outside of that, like Elmer Rodriguez Cruz struggled a little bit. Obviously Austin Ehrlicher had a good outing, three innings, no runs. But Luis Cohen struggled. But we did see, you know, Luis Cohen had some good moments. Elmer Rodriguez Cruz's fastball looked good. Max Carlson had a slider that made the batter fall down. And it was a strike. So that was fun. But no, outside of that, the pitching hasn't really blown me away right now. So there's really not much to talk about there. But the pitching in AAA right now,
yep,
is doing a little something. We're going into the bottom of the eighth, and Jason Alexander walked two people and didn't allow anything else through six innings, and then Jorge Benitez now has thrown one inning without anything other than a strikeout. So for those that can do the math, something's going on there.
Yes. I was gonna see if we could hold out,
but you never know how long it's gonna take. Like they still have to get through two innings, and Worcester still has to hit. So,
Someone phone with the Worcester's dugout and just tell them to bunt every at bat in the top of the ninth. Like, do that. Yes, bunt. Yeah, that's your at bats. But no, we will unfortunately not have a live reaction to what's going on in AAA, unfortunately. There's no guess the prospect. It's kind of hard to do guess the prospect with only one person guessing, because that's kind of...
Yeah, but then I'd get a point on Jake. I don't want to get a point that way, but...
I know who would take a point that way.
Tim?
Roman Reigns. He'd take that point. He'd take that point any day.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You sure? I know who wouldn't take that point. The Honorable Cody Rhodes. He wouldn't take that point.
Cody Rhodes would never take that point.
He'd never take a point like that. He's gonna earn. He would earn it. He would never want to take a point like that.
notable Red Sox person, Jared Carrabas. I'm pretty sure he's heartbroken. I don't know how he's going to survive.
I don't know.
He's devastated. Someone asked him to put the Cody Rhodes winning in baseball terms. Yes. And his whole thing was like someone going back to back to back and then losing to someone that's worse than them. And I was like, damn, you.
Yeah, the 2001 World Series.
You really hate Cody Rhodes, man.
Or he's just stuck with his love for Roman.
Yeah. I think it's more that because he was.
Hey, you can get off your knees. Like, you're not Ben Verlander to Shohei Ohtani.
I remember texting him when the Sami Zayn story was going on, and I was like, dude, I'm sorry, but like, I want Sami Zayn to win so bad. And he was like, yeah, I get it, but I can't root for anyone else right now. I was like, all right, I get it, but like, Sami's story's great, and like, the Cody story's great, like.
Absolutely. But no, I will say this as we close. Overall, we should have Jake back next week, so you won't have to listen to my voice as much. So shout out, Jake. The other thing is I am going on a scouting assignment this weekend.
Hey-o.
I will be at Boston College for when they play Wake Forest all 3 days. So I will get to be seeing the Wake Forest team live, which includes some of the top draft process, like Nick Kurtz. I'm not saying his name fast because it sounds really wrong. He's the Wake Forest first baseman. I'll be getting to see Josh Hartle, I don't know how you say it, whatever. I'll get to see Chase Burns, and I will also get to see Michael Massey, and those are probably the three guys who are going to start for Wake Forest. And I got to see all the other guys that they have, and the fact that Wake Forest is all three of their starting pitchers are all in the top. They're in the top 31 for MLB's MLB Pipeline's draft prospects. So I should be getting we'll get some scouting reports in, I guess, maybe next week. Maybe we'll do that depending on how much time we have, because I will be on that scouting mission, shall I say.
On that note, I will be at the Portland Reading games Friday, Saturday, Sunday of next week. So I won't be able to be there the whole week, but I'll go to the last three games of that series. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll get to see. I've seen most of those guys at this point because it's a pretty similar team to last year right now. But getting to see more live Roman Anthony. I didn't get to see. Well, I saw Marcelo Meyer at one point, but I'll get to see a healthy Marcelo Meyer. That's fun. Roman Anthony, Kyle Teal, Angel Bastardo, Christopher Troy. I don't know who I'm going to get to see pitch because I won't be there all week. So I don't think I'll get to see Hunter Dobbins because I'm guessing he'll pitch earlier in the week. But you never know.
Yeah, definitely. So maybe next week we'll have a special scouting report edition or something along those lines. But I guess that's where we're going to wrap it up. For Hunter, my name is Derek. We may have something to talk about that's special next week. We will see with the Worcester. So we'll see if that happens. So like I said, for Hunter, my name is Derek. Thanks for tuning in to the Pesky Report, and we'll see you next time.